This is Pure Decking, show number 397 for Thursday, June 20-something, 25th. 2020. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and wondering if being called INTJ is an insult. I'm Morps, tonight, and I've just now realized in my show notes and the template that I've used for years, tonight is misspelled. I have Mad Men. What is up, Mad Men?
Nothing much. So, not a lot of spell check on that thing.
It's Notepad. I've used a standard text file for years. for some reason, firing up like a full-blown word processor just to hammer out a few notes always seems like overkill to me. I don't know why. Of course, back in the day, it used to actually be a pain in the ass to launch Word, or I guess it'd be OpenOffice nowadays, but still, Writer. It's like, multi-core, lots of RAM, 48 gigs of RAM in this machine. It's like, nah, I'm going to use Notepad. I don't want to waste the memory. old habits.
I use Excel, and I don't think I've actually used it to make a spreadsheet yet.
You just take notes in Excel?
No, but there's a few things I want just in columns. And I don't consider just columns as actually using a spreadsheet. Unless you're actually doing the math and trying to figure out something, it's like a waste of it.
Not necessarily. There are ways for Excel to import data from other spreadsheets, and it's easy to copy and paste around if it's already in cells. So I could see some people appreciating that. So I have switched over to using Word for taking notes at work just because I can use the snipping tool to include screenshots, but that's a different problem. They're going to be on me to use OneNote at some point, I'm sure. It's like, well, that way you can share your notes. Nobody needs my notes. I've got like personal insults and, shit like that in there. Then they really want to see the notes. So, anyways, what are you drinking tonight, Madman? I'm getting into the Devil's Cut.
I am drinking Monkey Shoulder.
I got about half a bottle of that left. I should have gotten that. Damn. Oh, well.
I'm out of bourbon, so I'm drinking scotch.
Yeah, it's still a whiskey.
Yeah, I've got two bottles of scotch I figure I need to go through before I go buy more bourbon. And half a bottle of rye whiskey. Do I sound like an alcoholic?
I don't know. I didn't go for the Monkey Shoulder because it's in the back of the liquor cabinet. There's other bottles in the way.
Okay, so I'm not the only one that just has a lot of booze.
I work in IT security. How do you think I make it through the month without going on a shooting spree?
I just need this to happen. I just listen to random music and watch YouTube videos. That's how I try to make it through the day and deal with human beings as little as possible. Oh, they are nothing but annoying.
Yeah, no shit. I had a... it's not alcoholism as long as other people don't see you. That... Very nice, DP View. Very nice.
I don't have any web cameras, so they can't see me. And if I mute my phone, they don't even need to hear me in our group meetings.
I've got gaffer's tape over all my webcams. It's like, yep, if you're going to need alcohol to get it off there. Anyways, I completely lost my train of thought. Oh, the INTJ thing. Yeah, I had a coworker say, "Oh, you need to go take this personality test." Like, okay, why not? So I go take it, and it comes back INTJ, and they're like, "Oh, well, that explains a lot." I'm like, is that an insult? What's going on here? It's like, no, it's fine.
I think they're taking issue with the judge. For some reason, nobody likes judges. Let's see. I don't think of you as an introvert. I mean, you do a lot of extroverted things. Like, I don't know, host a web show. That seems extroverted.
Yeah, but I'm doing it for fun, for me. So I get to play with audio and equipment and, you know, the website and shit. And it's not really for anybody else. If other people happen to listen, hey, that's great. But, yeah. I think the int comes from the fact that I really don't give a fuck what other people think most of the time, which is probably pretty obvious in the way I talk to them. So,
no, that's the T. That's thinking rather than feeling. Forget what N stands for. And what the opposite of it is. It's been a while since I've had any psych courses.
So, yeah, anyways, so I guess we can get into it here. First article I have for tonight is one that Psychro sent me, but of course this is kind of all over the place, so we're just going to go with the one he sent me. And it's the blue leaks. So millions of law enforcement documents, some showing pictures of suspects, bank account numbers, and other sensitive information, have been published on a website that holds itself out as an alternative to WikiLeaks, according to security news site Krebs on Security. DDoS Secrets, short for Distributed Denial of Secrets, published what it said were millions of documents stolen from more than 200 law enforcement groups around the country. Reporter Brian Krebs, citing the National Fusion Center Association, confirmed the validity of the leaked data. DDoS Secrets said the documents spanned the last at least a decade, although some of the dates in the documents suggest the time spanned twice as long. It just might be when they were scanned in. So, dates on the most recent documents were from earlier this month, suggesting that the hack first exposed the documents happened in the last 3 weeks. The documents, which were titled Blue Leaks, were published on Friday, the date of this year's Juneteenth holiday celebrating the emancipation of enslaved African Americans. Has that been like a thing for more than 15 minutes? Because this is the first I'm hearing of it.
It depends on where you live. It isn't a national holiday, but Juneteenth has been a holiday in Texas for almost 100 years.
Okay.
It was a holiday in Louisiana, but unless you were from that area, you probably didn't know about it. Now, what's strange is, before it spread to the rest of the U.S., it actually spread to the Caribbean and to some African nations.
Well, I mean, it says, you know, it's the holiday celebrating the emancipation of enslaved African Americans in the Confederacy. Fine. It's like, really? I mean, this Juneteenth thing blew up this year, and it's really the first time hearing of it. So I'm like, I mean, I believe the date is real. I believe that, you know, I have no question that happened, and that's the day they picked. It just seemed kind of arbitrary to come up this year, you know?
Yeah, they've made issues because Trump decided to have a rally on that day, and I don't even think he knew what the significance of it was because he's from New York, and it's a Texas holiday. June 19th of, I think it's 1886.
Well, yeah.
Is when Texas freed their slaves.
But he bumped it back today once he found out what it was, didn't he?
Yeah, he switched it to Saturday. Yeah. But that, like I said, it was a Texas thing. It's when Texas freed their slaves, and Texas was the last state to do so because they were the last ones to actually have the proclamation read to them. They didn't have telegraph. Well, they didn't have a lot of telegraphs in the South, and it sometimes takes an army of blue coats to show up and say, hey guys, the black people are free now. You can't forcefully keep them on your plantations. Because, you know, just because there might be a telegraph in Austin, Texas, if it's being run by some dudes that are pro-Confederacy, they're not going to relay all the pertinent information. But I could see it becoming a federal holiday. I wouldn't be opposed to it. Now, my governor decided to try to make it a state holiday, which I think's crap. I think if we're going to do a state holiday, we should do it the time that my state ended slavery.
That's a good call.
Yeah. So any states in the Confederacy or former Confederacy, if you're going to do state holidays, you need to do the date that slavery ended in your state. But I could see Juneteenth being a federal holiday because technically the country didn't end it until the last place ended it. So I could see that as being both a state holiday and a federal holiday.
Hmm. I'm glad I asked. I didn't know. Blue Leaks had special significance in the aftermath of Minneapolis police officer suffocating a handcuffed black man to death when the officer placed his knee on the man's neck for 8 minutes 40. Yeah, you know, standing on somebody's head until dead is probably not the greatest thing for a cop to do. Master of understatement right there. I don't even really want to get into that. Of course, it was fucked up and he shouldn't have done it. Over the weekend, critics of police abuse took to social media to celebrate the leak and display documents that purportedly came from it. Some of them included an FBI document identifying Twitter posts that threatened law enforcement supporters' safety as of May 2020, motorcycle gangs that opportunistically used protests to pose as members of Antifa movement inciting riots, and for the gang to move large amounts of heroin into Minneapolis and St. Paul. Well, okay, I believe the latter half. I don't know about the gang, you know, pretending to be Antifa and starting riots, but I could see it to move heroin. I could see that. law enforcement personnel tracking potential protesters' use of Snoop Snitch, an app that detects when the IMSI catchers are being used to monitor cell phone data. Well, I don't think they need a... Well... I get why they would, but it's kind of like, wait a minute. They shouldn't care what software you got, but okay. The link hosting the data only sporadically loads and more often than not times out before loading the index page. When it does display, the page organizes leaked documents both by the law enforcement agency they came from and often by names of individuals purportedly associated with the document. Once again, clicking on a link more often than not fails to load the document, but torrent links have also been made available, but they too fail. Yeah, it's because everybody's pulling this shit down right now, so it's just getting DDoSed. What that means is that most of the world has only seen a small portion of the leak in tiny snippets without the ability to analyze the leak in its entirety firsthand. The leaks, according to Krebs, are the result of a hack on the server of NetCentral, a Houston-based web developer firm that caters to law enforcement groups, among other customers. Much of the pilfered data was distributed through law enforcement fusion centers across the United States that act as hubs for federal, state, and local agencies to share information. So just big-ass databases. Well, more like SharePoint than a database, but anyways. Krebs also quoted a former Assistant Secretary of Policy at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security saying that some of the exposed data could endanger the safety of individual sources by identifying them publicly. Yeah, well, that is snitches get stitches right there, isn't it?
Yeah, and it also means that source is no longer a good source. So, depending on who you're leaking, we're... possibly not going to be able to do some criminal investigations into, I don't know, motorcycle gangs that may be using Antifa as cover to run heroin. I mean, I support everyone's right to protest. I don't know if I support everyone's right to run heroin.
Or just riot.
Or riot. Because they may stir up a riot. That doesn't mean that they're actually rioting. It's like a bar fight. If you yell bar fight, but don't throw a punch, and a bar fight starts.
Yeah, I feel like that the last time you tried that, Madman, would have worked a lot better, you know, if there had been a lot more people there and it had been a bar rather than a Chinese buffet. But anyways.
Hey, they served beer. Don't get me wrong. Not enough people were drinking it. And throwing a pan of sesame chicken is not conducive to starting most bar fights. But it was the thought that counted.
It was fun.
And the second degree burns. Steam tables are hot.
In an article published by Wired, however, DDoS Secrets co-founder Emma Best said that they, Best's pronoun, spent a week prior to leak publication removing about 50 gigabytes of material disclosing sensitive details about crime victims, children, and information on unrelated private businesses, healthcare, and retired veterans associations. This is the largest public hack of American law enforcement agencies, Best told the publication in a series of text messages. It provides the closest inside look at state, local, and federal agencies tasked with protecting the public, including the government's response to COVID and BLM protests. So, I mean, you know, leaks like this are going to happen. And, you know, they think it's from a compromised web host, which would make sense to go after the people developing the systems for the cops to use. Because, of course, the cops aren't developing their own IT systems. Why would they? Pay somebody who knows how to do it rather than trying to do it in-house, right? So...
But why would development be using live files?
Madman.
Didn't they have a separate system?
Madman, you are technically correct, but I know of almost no development houses that actually abide by that. You would think they would build model data for every scenario they intend to handle and test with the model data, but no, they don't. They test with live data because it's the only way to be sure.
I could see... companies that do some in-house development, but that's not the way they make money doing this shortcut, maybe. But if your business model is we're developing databases for businesses, wouldn't you want to be a bit more secure? I mean, for two reasons. I mean,
oh, yeah, that kills your business right there.
It kills your business. And if I'm, I don't know, Houston PD... Do I really want you to have all the retirement accounts for all of my cops, along with all the notes in Judge Wanker's courtroom? Because that's more people with access to this information than possibly need access to this information.
You'd be
like,
surprised.
Build my database and I'll dump it in there.
Madman, you would be surprised what most IT people have access to. It's just by virtue of running the systems. But in this case, I imagine what's actually happened is NetCentral probably had a connection back into the police systems to service them so they could do support calls and make changes for them and things like that.
So they popped development and then moved into live.
Yeah, that would be... I mean, that's how I would do it if I was going to do this kind of shit. But... I mean, it's possible they had copies of live data. It's possible that, you know, that they're just hosting it. And, you know, it doesn't say how they got hacked either. You know, it could have been any number of ways. You know, they could have gotten some malware on one of the dev systems. They could have guessed a password. They could have called up one of the hosting companies that this company uses, social engineered them, and got a password reset. It's a totally normal thing that happens. So,
picked off dev, could have walked out with a thumb drive.
Well, that happens too. Oh, and actually, considering that you've got all the political stuff going on right now, it could be ticked off dev. It could be somebody with a political axe to grind. Said, hey, I've got access. You know, it could be somebody pulled a Snowden. Said, hey, I've got access to all this. I think what's going on, you know, they believe in abolishing the police, which would be dumb because it's their paycheck. But maybe if they're quitting. You know, they could be a true believer and they took all this data to support the cause.
When it comes to local and state police, almost everything is available through Freedom of Information Act requests. The only things that aren't are like in a grand jury. A lot of times information not really relevant to the charge can find its way in. Like, let's say we're deciding to, I don't know, pop laser for growing marijuana in his backyard. Not that that would ever happen. But in the course of this investigation, we find out that he's actually building an atomic bomb. That's not related to the charge we're getting him on. So we're going to pop him on it because, you know, we can
but
do that.
But ATF might still be interested.
But it's going to be two different grand jury charges. So the drug case isn't going to release any of the atomic bomb info. That's a different... A different thing. Or even a better case, someone who is innocent but tangentially related to whoever you're investigating, their private info gets pulled into that too and generally gets scrubbed before releasing to the public.
Well, I'm wondering how much of this is pre-scrubbed. Like, if this is truly like a SharePoint for cops, because they're talking about a fusion center, this might be like just, you know, scans of data, document dumps, people's notes.
Well, a lot of times the scrubbing doesn't happen until the Freedom of Information request.
Well, that's what I mean. Is this hasn't been processed for something that they know is going to get published. This is just, you know, raw data and notes and shit. You know, I was joking earlier about how they're going to, you know, people want my notes from meetings. And I said, no, because I've got, shit in there that nobody else needs to see, like personal insults and what I think of some of our developers. And then they're really interested in seeing it. So, you know, when my notes get passed around, I usually go in and clean them up first.
Yeah, and this is something similar. Although I think it said earlier in the article that whoever's leaking it did scrub for removing minors.
No, whoever published it is doing that. And that's that DDoS secrets or DDO secrets site.
They said they're the ones leaking.
They're the ones publishing. I don't know who leaked it to them. But yeah, they said they went through and removed about 50 gigs of stuff. Stuff about crime victims, children, information on unrelated private businesses, healthcare, and retired veterans. So, but that's only as good as they think they are, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're probably doing massive, you know, it's a lot of data. So they're probably doing just, you know, dumb word searches. They're not sitting there reading every document before they publish it. So, you know, one, did they miss something? I'd say the likelihood's pretty good. And two, you know, I mean, you know, they might not have thought that it was any harm in publishing it, but the cops might disagree, like the sources we were talking about earlier.
Oh yeah, because they were going with tangential people and covering up victims and minors. They didn't say they were looking to remove sources of leaked information to the cops.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't... Snoopy narking on the Crips might still be in there.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we hear about several unrelated stabbings, you know, in the next couple of weeks as people review these things and say, wait a minute, we got a snitch.
This isn't Great Britain. They're going to shoot the guy.
Well, to be fair, I was thinking prison, but, you know, okay.
Yeah. Oh, why do you think you're snitching? They're not going to prison. I'm narking on people.
My understanding was usually what happened is they went to prison first, and then they started narking on people trying to get out.
Plea bargain my ass before we go to jail, before we go to court.
Note to self, do not involve Madman in illegal activities. He will narc on you. Got it. Okay.
I'm too pretty to go to jail. I mean, you've seen me. I'd be beating men off with sticks.
Well, a part of that phrase might be right.
But yeah, no, you can snitch before you go to jail. That's why so few of our, one of the many reasons so few people charged with a crime actually go to court.
Yeah, plea bargain.
Plea bargain.
They still go to court, but it's really just for sentencing or, you know, final statements and shit.
No, you can get a judge to sign off without ever having a court date. Only 6% of the people going through the criminal justice system set foot in a court.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's where you, but you still have to usually do a, you know, a signed statement or whatever it is. I forget.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
it's called.
You're signing something, and your lawyer's signing something, and the DA signing something, and a judge somewhere is rubber stamping it.
Yeah, they're
never set foot in a courtroom.
Somebody's reviewing it. You just don't have to go in there and stand up and say, "Your Honor." So.
But you still get to pay court costs.
Which, you know, that's the thing is, yeah, that's probably the more expedient thing to do. And if you're in that situation, it's really different. But from my point of view, if you're already paying court costs and you're going through the system, you might as well get the full experience. Like, get up there in front of the judge and jury. Have some fun with it. You know, embellish the story a little bit. You know, jazz it up. See if you can get some background music to play while you give testimonial.
I just walked in and said, "Hi, I've never seen the inside of the courtroom, and I really wanted to. And since you're still charging me the $145, I figured I'd take up some of your time." And the judge looked at me and said, "Good point. We're going to drop the major charge so long as you've already registered your car. And have a nice day, sir." Amazing. I have registered my car, so you're not taking my license for me not having a registered car. This is great.
It's like, nope, you're just going to pay court fees and that's it.
Yeah, I thought I might have done something interesting, like run drugs. No, I'm just too fucking lazy to go pay my tax. And you know they won't let you pay them over the internet if you don't pay them before they're due?
I did not know that, but it'd been a long time since I'd skipped out paying my tags, so...
Yeah, and then once I'm a month behind, I mean, why be in a hurry at that point?
So your name doesn't end up in one of these document leaks? You don't want somebody saying, "Oh, his name was in the leaks. He must be a snitch coming after you."
Like, did you read the leak, sir? I do not pay registration on my car in a timely manner. I'm a sovereign citizen.
Oh, that'll end well.
I don't believe in your tax structure.
It's like, well, there's empirical evidence that it exists, so...
I'm pretty sure there's imperial evidence that France exists. You ever see it?
Yes.
Oh, well, I haven't. I think you're lying.
Well, photos of. My sister's been there. So, does FaceTime count?
I don't know. That could be faked. It's kind of like watching Star Trek at that point.
I'd be more impressed if somebody was faking France as a conspiracy theory. I mean, that'd be impressive. I mean, I'm willing to acknowledge that all of Europe may, in fact, be a CIA conspiracy theory, but that'd be still be very impressive.
Yeah, especially how much stuff I've had to read about it. What's the next story, Morps?
The next story is from the BBC and is one R you sent me. Facial recognition now to predict criminals based on AI, and this is pissing people off. U.S. Universities claim that it can use facial recognition to predict criminality has renewed debate over racial bias in technology. It's like, yep, this person's much more likely to be an offender. What was the first indication? Well, the brown skin. Wait a minute.
His rap sheet, sir. The answer is his rap sheet. Facial recognition, they're checking against mugshots.
I'm thinking the cyanide and happiness cartoon with the white knight.
Oh.
Harrisburg University researchers said that their software can predict if someone is a criminal based solely on a picture of their face. The software.
They've been playing that same game. Go ahead.
Yep, there it is. See, he's a black guy. That's horrible. I'm sorry. That's a horrible joke.
No, you have to also narrow it down to the ages, 15 to 35.
The problem is that the article really, really wants to go there and just doesn't. So...
Well, this is kind of what they're saying. We can look at you and judge you strictly on physical characteristics.
Yeah. So the software is intended to help law enforcement prevent crime, it said. But 1,700 academics have signed an open letter demanding the research remains unpublished. One Harrisburg research member, a former police officer, wrote, "Identifying the criminality of a person from their facial image will enable a significant advantage for law enforcement agencies and other intelligence agencies to prevent crime from occurring." That doesn't seem like he was one of the people asking for it to remain unpublished.
No, I want them to publish the methodology so I know whether or not they're racist. I mean, I'm fine with not putting the technology into use until we've studied it a bit.
Well, I didn't put it in, but there's several articles going on about how they're talking about outlawing facial recognition technology until they get a better handle on it.
No, if you outlaw it, that prevents you from getting a better handle on it.
Well, no, I mean, it's not outlawing it like nobody can use it, outlawing it like law enforcement can't use it.
Because from what I understand, the way it's working is they're pretty much matching faces to mugshots.
DPVU and the IRC is confirming that at least some of Europe exists. So either he's confirming that parts of Europe exist and it's not a CIA conspiracy, or he's part of it.
Oh, that's a 50-50 chance there. We have two options.
That's the fun thing about these wacky conspiracy theories. It's like that. You know, it's like gang stalking. It's like, yeah, anybody who questions it or says that you're insane, they're part of the gang that's stalking you. They're one of them.
But the way I can see this technology being used, so they come up with a possible identification, right?
Mm-hmm.
The camera's got a picture that it just matched with whatever the mugshot was. So the cops, I'm assuming iPhone, gets a message, "We believe so-and-so is here," and it pops up the picture of the dude from the mugshot and the picture of the dude on the street, and the cop can look at it and be like, "Oh, this matches," or, "Oh, this computer's full of crap."
There was an article about somebody actually was falsely arrested because the computer said they were a criminal. Apparently it took them quite a while to get it cleaned up.
No, yeah, I know people who have trouble traveling because their name matches a dude on a terrorist list.
Yeah.
It sucks, but that's what we have to go with. Perhaps there should be fewer terrorists named Muhammad.
Here we go. The researchers claim their software operates with no racial bias. But the organizers of the open letter, the Coalition for Critical Technology, said such claims are based on unsound scientific premises, research, and methods, which numerous studies spanning our respective disciplines have debunked over the years. These discredited claims continue to resurface. The group points to countless studies suggesting people belonging to some ethnic minorities are treated more harshly in the criminal justice system, distorting the data on what criminality supposedly looks like. Well, I mean, maybe. University of Cambridge computer science researcher Kirakta De Silva, commenting on the controversy, said, "It's irresponsible for anyone to think they can predict criminality based solely on a picture of a person's face." Well, I don't know, the track marks, you know, the circles under their eyes from the drug usage, the shaky eyes because they wouldn't hold still long enough to take a picture.
The swastika tattoo on their forehead.
Yeah, you know. CIA glow in the dark. Yeah, the implications are this, that crime prediction software can do serious harm. It is important that researchers and policymakers take these issues seriously. Numerous studies have shown that machine learning algorithms, in particular face recognition software, has racial, gendered, and age biases, she said, such as a 2019 study indicating facial recognition works poorly on women and older and black or Asian people.
It's not racism or sexism. It's a small sample size. I can't help it if computer programmers tend to be fat, nerd dudes, possibly of the pasty variety, but I have to say possibly because I know some fat nerdy black dudes that are programmers. I know two of them. Granted, I'm not in that business, there could be more, but one of them's a Naruto fan and it completely blew my mind. I didn't know black people knew anime existed.
Madman, you know the Wu-Tang Clan has been a thing for a while, right?
I don't listen to rap, and I didn't even know that was an anime reference. I haven't
it's
seen
not,
all
it's
of
a
it.
Kung Fu movie reference, but they still know what... Okay, it's fine. Never mind.
Okay, whatever. But still, it's a small sample size. The way you fix this isn't by calling it racist. The way you fix it is open up, have some tryouts. Have dudes come play Dance Dance Revolution with motion capture. And the computers will figure out, oh, that's a black dude dancing. That's a Chinese dude dancing. We can get a whole bunch of Mexicans to swing by Home Depot and you can fix that one real quick. Whatever. It's not racism. It's not even, it's just, I can't even call it bad programming because I don't think they're programming it. I think they're actually doing machine learning of just the cameras matching up a face. And it's seen 10,000 white faces because that's what was being fed into it. And it seemed like, I don't know, 10 black people. Switch it up.
In the past week, one example of such a flaw went viral online when an AI upscaler that depixels faces turned former U.S. President Barack Obama white in the process. And the picture is kind of funny. Because, I mean, it's like you can see from the pixelated version that the upscaled face it came up with was kind of could fit. And... you know, I mean, Obama's not exactly the darkest of the, you know, when it comes to somebody who's not white, so...
No, he's mulatto. His mom's white. He's going to be a lighter-colored black dude.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can see where the upscaler did that, but still. The upscaler itself simply invents new faces based on initial pixelated photos, not really aiming for a true recreation of the real person. But the team behind the project, Pulse, have said they amended their paper to say that it may illuminate some biases in one of the tools they use to generate the faces. The New York Times has also this week reported on a case of a black man who became the first known case of wrongful arrest based on false facial recognition algorithm match. In the Harrisburg case, the university had said the research would appear in a book published in Springer Nature, whose titles included the well-regarded academic journal Nature. Springer, however, said the paper was at no time accepted for publication. Instead, it was submitted to a conference, which Springer will publish the proceedings of, and has been rejected by the time the open letter was issued. It went through a thorough peer review process. The series editor's decision to reject the final paper was made on Tuesday, the 16th of June, and was officially communicated to the authors on Monday, the 22nd of June, the company said in a statement. Harrisburg University, meanwhile, took down its own press release at the request of the faculty involved. Yeah, in other words, people are bitching too much, so now they're backing off.
Did nobody double-check the photo on that wrongful arrest?
The article was apparently they took him back to the station, and it took him a long time to sort it out because the facial recognition said he was somebody else, and he's like got ID and shit, and they decided, well, that his ID was fake. Like you know, they had made that initial determination that he was the one they wanted, and or something like that.
And I don't guess the program shows the source picture to confirm with the I'm looking at the dude.
I don't know because I only skimmed the other one where the guy was arrested. It was New York Times, and you know how long it is, and they were making a big deal out of it because it was a black guy, so obviously, you know, racism involved. So, you know, anyways, it makes it, I really hate it when they get all this shit mixed in because it makes it very difficult to analytically figure out what the hell's really going on. Because it's, you know, it's like, oh, it's racist. It's this, it's that. It's like, it might be racist, but you don't need to get all emotional about it. Give us the facts and you don't need to elaborate for hours on end about, you know, how... Oh, because the protests and George Floyd going on, anything that happens with a black person must be because of systemic racism. It's like, no, look, we used to have systemic racism. Now we have echoes of it. And there's probably still some bits that need addressing. And I'm all for that. But it doesn't mean every mistake is because of racism. You know, like you said, this is probably just they have a lot of bad data or, you know, poorly slanted data or whatever, right? So,
yeah, they just need a larger data set. And if they don't have access to the source photo, I would make that part of the program, just so you can do a visual ID yourself.
So, the last of the article here, and while it supported academic freedom, research from its staff does not necessarily reflect the views and goals of this university. Well, that's what Harrisburg University wrote. The Coalition for Critical Technology Organizers, meanwhile, have demanded all publishers must refrain from publishing similar studies in the future. Which means if you had a study that showed some common facial features in people who are likely to perform criminal activity, you couldn't do that research because it's considered racist, even if it had nothing to do with race. Like, you know, no, it's this particular angle of the nose or shape of the eye or something, right? So
that's becoming phrenology. That's becoming to sound a bit like phrenology. I thought they were just double checking, because a big way you can stop future crime, criminals tend to reoffend on certain categories. Like a child molester. Chester child molester generally doesn't straighten up his life. Certain sex crimes are that way. If you've been a drug dealer for a bit, I know you can turn your life around, but if they're just going by pre-existing and then here's the list of people in this crowd that have these felonies, those might be people you want to look at. That's the way I was thinking they're doing. They're actually just trying to say you have this slanted eye ridge and now you're a criminal.
I don't know, man.
Because I could see that slowly becoming racist. Not because it's initially racist. It's just crime according to ethnicity has changed in the past. Because this is going to sound racist because it sounds that way. Right now, the black population in the U.S. commits a lot more violent crimes than any other ethnic group. But that has not always been the case. Yeah, pure statistics.
Okay.
They account for like 50% of the murders and 65% of the robberies, and they make up 13% of the population. And the ones actually committing the crimes are usually dudes, so you cut that 13 in half because half of them are women. And then they're dudes of a certain age range. So it actually drops down to like 3% of the population is committing an overwhelming amount of the crime. But that hasn't always been the case. You look at crime statistics from like the 40s, 50s, and 60s. They were about the same as white people. I mean, slightly higher, but you could blame that on something other than race or anything. I mean, it was within standard deviation, but it was close to the norm. And now it's not.
That's actually really interesting, though, because in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, the claims of systemic racism were very valid. You had Jim Crow laws. You had segregation. You had, you know, those very real systemic racism problems, which we're still seeing. You know, I'm using the word echoes because I don't know what else I'd call it that. I guess the results of today, even though they've gotten as far as I know, that's not even that good way to put it. I'd like to think we've gotten most of the overtly racist laws off the books, and if we've missed any, I'm all for getting rid of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's going to be echoes of that. There's going to be...
I'm not even sure there's echoes of systemic racism. There's just racism. And you can't get rid of that. There's going to be a racist asshole somewhere. The only way to get rid of that is to shoot him. Or just wait for him to die of old age. But I don't know if there's any actual laws or policy that's racist.
Well, okay, there you go. That's good. What I mean by echoes of that is, like, it's you know, right now, again, statistically, black families are generally poorer than whites and several of the other minorities right now. And you could easily say that's because, wealth tends to follow family lines, and with the way the laws were and the system was, they haven't had but a couple of generations to really try to build up any wealth. So, and, you know, poverty and being of local economic status is usually a much better indicator of crime.
Well, what I was getting at with the culture, with the change in criminality from the 40s, 50s, and 60s to now, it's mainly to do a change in culture in the African American community. Back then, like 90 to 95% of them people born were born to an intact family. Mommy and daddy were in the house. Now it's down to what, 20% of those families, mommy and daddy are in the house?
Don't they still have welfare rules that basically prevent a man from being around if they're going to have, get, you know, receive welfare?
Depending on where you are.
Yeah.
But that's, I think that may be the change in criminality, because white people are becoming more criminal, and we're also becoming less intact family-wise. So it's cultural, and it can swing back the other way. So if you're at a time, if you're building this data set in a time where the culture of that ethnic group is more crime-oriented, then at that time, it may seem racially biased, but it's just statistically, that's who's committing the crimes right now.
We need to get, for this discussion, we need to get, you know, oh, that's even worse. I was about to suggest we need some token black people here. No.
Well, it's not just that ethnic group.
Oh, that's worse.
No one thinks about it, but at the turn of the century in America,
we can't
there were
this.
A lot of Jews in the mob. They then got legitimacy, and they're not as criminal anymore. Unless you consider bank fraud, because I want to make that joke.
All right, that's enough. There's no winning this. We're going to just keep going, and you know, somebody's going to listen to this and lose their fucking minds. So it's like, no, we're just trying to examine it dispassionately. We're not really. Damn it. Okay, next one up is from CNBC. Let's see. DP View has a good point. He says a lot of the black crime charges right now is because of the war on drugs.
Do a bit.
I don't know. That's the thing. I actually don't know. I'm going off what you've said, some things I've seen. I'm just some guy. I don't know. I'm a computer nerd. So, I'm just shooting the shit, running the ideas. So, anyways, next article is from CNBC. Google just announced it will automatically delete your location history by default. In other words, they're starting to notice that all the invasive privacy is pissing people off. That or they've actually seen enough people to move off Google services and start using shit like DuckDuckGo. Google has announced Wednesday it will start to automatically delete users' location and web history activity after 18 months. Previously, users had to turn this setting on if they didn't want Google to store their data for an indefinite amount of time. The move allows Google to still hold on to information and recommend things that you might like based on your previous locations and browser history, but it won't have years and years worth of private data. Google's location history tracking is still off by default, but turning it on can be useful if you want products like Google Maps to offer personalized recommendations like restaurants you might like based on where you've been in the past. Okay, obviously this person's on an iPhone, because if you use Android and you try to do anything with Maps, the first thing it does is turn your history on whether you want it to or not. Or Google might know from your location history that you typically leave for work at 8 a.m. and can recommend that you leave a bit earlier to avoid traffic on a particular day. When location tracking is on, however, Google follows your location with precise details, something you can see if you view your Google Maps timeline. Now, if you turn location history on, Google will auto-delete that data after 18 months. Do not forget the Irish.
The mob reference I made earlier.
Oh, the stream must be way behind.
Oh, and check out Kill the Irishman if you want to watch an Irish mob movie. Set in Ohio. Really good.
Well, there's
that's
no...
Christopher Walken in it.
So basically, Google's now saying they're only going to keep 18 months worth of data. I wonder if this is to placate privacy advocates or if this is they're running out of hard drive space.
I think they're learning that something I did 12 years ago is useless to them.
Yeah. I mean, that's the most relevant stuff is what you're doing right now.
If it's a repeat buy, then it's going to stay in my history. So if they're tracking how many times I order Domino's, well, they're going to see that I order Domino's. But when's the last time I bought a couch? Not going to be super relevant.
Madman, I don't think you've ever bought a couch. I think you've always acquired couches, but I don't know that you've ever bought a couch.
I've bought a chair. But no, you're right. I've never bought a couch.
Yeah, you've always acquired them from somebody else.
Yeah, the couch I'm sitting on now magically appeared in this apartment. I don't even know where the fuck it came from. It's being stored here. I've got a leather sectional.
It just showed up.
Really nice.
Did you finally get rid of that couch that you got from me?
Oh yeah, that sucker died a long time ago.
Making sure.
Got thrown off the second story building. You should have been there.
I should have been there.
It splintered wonderfully.
Okay. Sony reveal, this is from mickey.com.au. Sony publicly reveals the PlayStation Bug Bounty Program. This is cool because I want to see more. I like seeing this. I want more companies to start going this route. As they're offering bug bounties, even if it's not as much money as somebody potentially could make off one of these vulnerabilities, you're still a lot. You still have a lot of researchers who are a lot more likely to go for the bug bounty, assuming it's a relatively good bounty, rather than sell it on the dark web or just open source, just release it. You still have a lot of researchers who would just give it to them for free and say, here it is, you got 60 days before I release it kind of shit. But by having a bug bounty program, you usually sidestep, the threats of lawsuits because somebody wants to talk about a bug at a conference. You sidestep all the, shit getting released on the dark web or just getting, dumped out on the open for, immediate exploitation, Okay.
After Do you think they'll be honest with the payments? Because I've heard complaints about computer bug bounties that they don't always pay.
They don't. A lot of times what they'll do is they'll claim you weren't the first to report a bug to them, even if you were. So usually it's worth going through, there's a couple of third-party services that you can go through for bug bounties, especially if you want to be anonymous with a company. But I still like the idea that the companies are saying, hey, let's do a bug bounty program. Let's legitimize this. And depending on how they set it up, you can eliminate a lot of the problems of doing vulnerability research. But you're right in that they could set it up poorly. They could try to do what Yahoo tried to do a few years ago and say, yeah, give us a bug, we'll give you a T-shirt. Or I forget who it was. There was one of them that they claimed they were operating a bug bounty program, and they turned around and tried to sue a bunch of the people who submitted bugs to them, claiming it violated their terms of service. So, and there was, I think, is it Facebook? Maybe not. I don't remember now. There's another company that's bug bounty program was so crazy that to submit anything to it, you basically had to agree to an NDA and a whole bunch of stuff, and that's just for submitting. And, so that's the other side of it. If it's not well done, you might as well not have one because nobody's going to participate, right? You'll still have your vulns just show up on GitHub or Pastebin and, people selling them online. After some time of being secretive about taking the initiative to bolster its product's defenses by addressing existing exploits based on inputs from people in the security research community, Sony is officially unveiling to the public the PlayStation Bug Bounty Program. Sony is running the program with HackerOne, the self-proclaimed industry standard for hacker power security. The move effectively adds Sony from a list of other manufacturers who resort to a bounty program to offset their products from exploitation. Okay. For Sony specifically, this concerns not just the PlayStation 4, but also the PlayStation Network as well. The bounty pays between the ranges of $100 to $50,000, depending on the nature of the vulnerabilities being addressed. Minor exploits tend to fall in the low pay scale range, while the critical exploits pay the thousands. Those who are active audiences within the hacking scene will find surprise coming. Wow, whoever wrote this. coming across two names who are recipients of the program, namely Octexor, who is paid a total of $75,000 for 6 exploits, and The Flow, who is paid $10,000 for a single exploit. Before coming known for his alias, The Flow has long been in the scene. However, he is most popular for bringing to light custom firmware and a handful of useful plugins for the PS Vita. Octexor
he doesn't have as good an impact as The Flow, but remains among the significant individuals in the hacking scene.
For someone who touts himself as having hacked PlayStation and a zero-day exploits hunter at Kaspersky Great, the guy's potential... Okay, I'm done reading this. When I skimmed it earlier, it made sense. I didn't realize that the person hadn't passed an English course. My God, whoever wrote this. It's got to be translated from something else. Anyways, so Sony's doing a bug bounty program, and so far it looks like it's on the up and up. If they're going through HackerOne, it's probably on the up and up. HackerOne's a project that tries to both curate people doing the vulnerability research and provide, I guess you'd call it, consulting services to companies wanting to run a bug bounty program. So if they're involved, it's probably on the up and up.
So. And $100 doesn't sound horrible. I don't know how many people are going to get the 5,000, but 10,000.
If you've got a vulnerability that'll let you install Linux on the new PlayStation console that's coming out, they're probably going to give you on the upper end of that scale, because they're going to want to know about that. Whereas if you've just got something that lets you fuck with people in the forums or get around bans and the PlayStation Network or something, they're probably not going to give you as much, because it's one of these things where it's like, of course, the problem is that you're not getting to determine what a bug is worth. The company is getting to determine what it's worth. And that's why it's usually good when you see like HackerOne or somebody involved, because that helps them, they're bringing in an outside perspective that's going to help them scale it. If you're trying to do it all internally, of course your board's going to be like, well, no, they should just give it to us for free. We're not going to give them any money. Why would we do, shit like that? So.
And they're going to want to see the bug before they pay you any money at all. Mm-hmm. And once you show them the bug, they can patch it without you getting any cash.
There's no bargaining chip, which is why it's good to see, an organization like HackerOne involved, because at least then it's more likely to be on the up and up. The downside is that if they do play that game, the idea there is that you can just release the bug and, cause havoc for them, because, they silently patch it. That doesn't mean everybody's going to get that patch, right? I guess it depends on what it is. If it's something on, the PlayStation Network or something on a server they run, then yeah, they could just patch it. But, if they get a reputation of screwing people over on their bug bounty program, then nobody will participate anyways, which defeats the point. But, far be it for a corporation to show anything other than short-sighted, right? So, anyways, next article. It's from iMore. Apple's ARM switch will be the end of boot camp. So in the last Apple conference, they're moving to ARM for their Macs. So Apple has confirmed that switching to its own ARM-based Apple Silicon will signal the end of boot camp support. As The Verge notes, Apple will start switching its Macs to its own ARM-based processors later this year,
and you won't be able to boot to run Windows in boot camp on them. Microsoft only licenses Windows 10 on ARMs to PC makers to pre-install a new hardware, and the company hasn't made copies of the operating system available for anyone to license or freely install. Then on John Gruber's WWDC talk show, Craig Ferganali confirmed that Apple would not support boot camp on ARM Macs. We're not direct booting an alternate operating system. Purely virtualization is the route. These hypervisors can be very efficient, so the need to direct boot shouldn't really be a concern. Except, I'm not aware of very good hypervisor software existing for ARM platforms just yet. I'm sure somebody's probably ported some of the Linux-based ones, but I don't remember seeing a VMware SKU for ARM servers. You know, KVM and QMU, sure, but yeah, the only wrinkle here is that Apple's Rosetta software, which will be used to help translate software to make it compatible with Apple ARM Macs, will not support virtualization platforms like Parallels natively. This means that companies will have to rebuild their virtualization software for ARM if they want it to be used on Apple's next generation of Macs. This is because Rosetta will not work with virtual machine apps that virtualize the x86-64 platforms. So, yeah, if you need multiple operating systems, you're going to have to stick to the Intel-based Macs. But the thing is, if you're emulating multiple CPU types, performance takes a hell of a hit. Because when you're emulating, like in VMware or something, you're not changing architectures. You're still running x86 code on an x86 platform. You've just got a wrapper on it so that, you know, you're not running in core zero necessarily. I guess it depends on how your CPU's virtualization instructions work, but you know, usually that VM's in user space. But if you're having to translate from x86 calls to ARM calls, you know, you're going to have to emulate the x86 platform and software, and that is going to be slow, especially because ARM is a reduced instruction set platform. It's not going to have the 30-some-odd instruction sets that's in a modern x86 CPU, or it's x86, you know, most of them are 64-bit, so they're going to have to emulate all of that in software, and performance is going to take a hell of a hit. DPView says he thinks you can run ESXi on ARM. Used to have an ESXi Apple server back in the lab. Yes, they did make ESXi for Apple servers, but that's probably the Intel-based ones. So ESXi ARM. I'm pretty sure that's not a thing. ESXi on ARM at the edge. Okay, so VMware is working on it. So there's a question, though, are you going to have to run ARM code in a virtualized platform? Is it going to do, is it going to translate, you know, x86 to ARM? Because I can't see that being performant. Now, if you're loading an ARM-based Linux on there and running a bunch of Docker apps, who cares? But, yeah, Windows is going to be the rub, because I do know a lot of developers on Macs, you know, they virtualize Windows for the Windows-specific software they need, so I don't know. That's going to be interesting to see with that. I'm more interested to see that what that does to Apple's market share.
Do you think that may change the idea of some fanboys?
No. But I think you're going to see even less Macs in the corporate workspace than you see nowadays. I mean, they're already a pretty limited population. You see developers using them. Occasionally, you'll see the marketing guys use them. You'll see some execs use them because, you know, it's a status symbol kind of thing. But if you can't run all of the corporate security packages, all the software packages that they're wanting to use, although granted, with Office 365, it's all mostly web-based, or at least they have web-based options. I don't know. I don't know how that'll play out. I'm just curious to see. I mean, you know, it might swing the other way. You might start seeing a lot of platforms start moving over to ARM-based rather than x86 based, which, to be fair, that Intel platform that most of our modern desktop and servers are descended from is getting on 30 years old now. And one of the reasons that ARM processors are so much more efficient, especially when it comes to power usage, is they're not carting around 30 years of legacy code and compatibility, right? If I want to, I could totally take a 16-bit DOS and load it on my machine. I don't think an 8-bit... Well, I've never tried. I don't think I've ever tried to load 8-bit code, like old-school GW Basic without DOS. I don't think I've ever tried to load that on modern hardware, but you can get old 16-bit code to run. Usually not within Windows, but, you know, if you're booting it native, it'll run. Because your CPU is compatible with it going at least back to the 386. I don't know about the original 8080, but I've never tried to go that far back. But 286, 386, the 16-bit stuff, yeah, you can still run it.
You think how backwards compatible does your company need to be?
For most companies, last 10 years. There's occasionally some ancient piece of legacy software that's still running, but, an old AS400 or something's kicking around or being emulated on a power box somewhere. But even then, you can usually wrap the client software that needs to run in a virtual machine or like some kind of a Citrix-like environment where you're delivering it, or you've got a back-end server that's running a screen scraper and presenting a web interface kind of shit. So there's usually ways around that. Think how often, think how long Windows 10 has been out. And there are some companies that are just now migrating to it because Windows 7 support ended a little while ago.
Yeah.
In fact, I know several companies are still on Windows 7. That was one of the big pushes past couple of years for my company, was finally getting rid of all the damn Windows 7 boxes. We found a Windows Vista box still running because somebody had an old printer hooked up to it. They couldn't get to work with new versions of Windows. I don't remember exactly why. But it'll be interesting if things start moving over to ARM for end-user devices. I mean, you already have them for things like Chromebooks. You have them, like, in Raspis, little development boards and things like that. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. And for modern gaming rigs, I could actually see a move over to ARM not being that difficult as long as the underlying operating systems and things like that supported it, because really they're more GPU-dependent than CPU-dependent. They're not really taking advantage of all the craziness in our CPUs anymore. Most of your game engines are based on GPU. So if you have things like Vulkan and OpenGL support, or even DirectX support, if Microsoft, ports it, that would get a good chunk of the software moved over. Almost everything these days is written against is usually written against libraries as opposed to bare hardware. So you'd have to recompile, but yeah, I don't know. PlayStation free BSD based and Xbox Microsoft based. Yeah, Microsoft uses, I believe they call it Windows Core. That's basically the Windows kernel and a bunch of their support libraries for .NET and DirectX. And then they wrap different different interfaces and stuff around it. But they've got a different processor architecture in the Xbox, if I remember right. I don't think it's x86. I think they were running something power based. Or was it I might be confusing my generations of consoles, too. I don't remember.
Do you think Mac going to ARM will give them a significant computing advantage, or is it just it's a new toy, more power efficiency?
I think they'll be advertising that their laptops go all day without needing a recharge. I think that'd be the big one. Well, see, that's the thing, is ARM is more efficient than x86, but it's generally not more powerful. it's generally not got as much horsepower when it comes to just raw number crunching as the x86-based platforms do. Like, your desktop computer is still, you know, pretty much faster than your phone in almost all tasks, right? I don't know. I don't... But that's also, too, ARM hasn't had as nearly the development time, and you don't have the software stack nearly as optimized. You know, a lot of what's on ARM today is ported from other platforms, like x86, and then you've got libraries and shit on top of it to make it compatible.
So they're not actually making a lot of stuff for ARM, so it's hard to see how fast it could be.
That's right, that's right. So it's hard to compare, so you don't really get that apples-to-apples comparison. Huh! I just realized what I did there. Unintentional pun. Awesome. So we'll see. We'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Oh, the Apple PC debate can start up again. I kind of ignored it when I went to Intel, because I'm like, they're the same machine. Except Apple wants $300 or more bucks for their shit than everyone else does, because they're cocky bastards.
$300, dude. Try the, just double the price. You know, you're buying a high-end, you know, buying a nice laptop, buying a MacBook, just double the price to get the MacBook. Yeah, I mean, it's generally getting a MacBook comparable, it's usually about $1,000 more than a comparable PC.
If they're going with a completely different structure for their processors, they can start arguing we're actually better again.
Well, that will be interesting to see what happens, because that'll be reminiscent of the 16-bit era, where you had a bunch of different architectures floating around that were largely incompatible with each other. Because you had the early Macs, which were going to power. You had stuff like the Amiga, where it was still based on the Motorola processor, but they were making a lot of their own chips. I think the Ataris as computers were pretty much dead at that point. You had the early DOS-based PCs, which were 16-bit, starting to move into 32-bit. So you had a bunch of different platforms competing with each other.
Oh, and that also was able to do the niche thing. Mac started doing production of, like, music and shit, and everyone else was using PCs for life.
Well, the way it generally worked out was, if you were writing music or doing video work, you got a Mac. If you were doing 3D work, you got an Amiga. Like Babylon 5, all the CG for that was rendered on an Amiga. Some of the Star Trek stuff was, although I think they moved later to... I don't remember now. It's been too long since I read that. But they also used Amigas a lot in a lot of filming for, you know, video streaming, because you could get the video toaster stuff for them. And then you used PCs for business. And I think the reason PCs won is because they were used in office buildings and school, and eventually in schools. Early days, Macs were in the schools, and before that it was Commodores with the PETs. But it became kind of what people were exposed to more than anything else. And I think that's one of the reasons why PCs kind of won, is because they were in the businesses, and that's what most people saw. You think they used Macs to render the Electric Dream graphics? They might have. That's the thing, though, is you had different art houses using different tools. But yeah, Macs were used a lot for video editing, and they were used a lot for music work early on, audio work. And the power processors were generally faster at that. That was one of the reasons they were used for that, is that their processors were actually better architected for it. Now, I think a lot of that, too, has to do with what people end up developing on that platform and optimizing their software for, right? Because, you know, yeah, okay, Macs are better at this, Amigas were better at that, DOS machines are better at business, but that's the software people wrote on those things, right? You know, you could have optimized other things to run on these platforms and eventually got them there. Now, it might not have been as easy because, you know, some of the hardware would lend itself different ways. So, but yeah, we might start seeing that kind of stuff again, where these different platforms are competing for who does what better. Or you'll see a lot more software written in shit like Java, so that they only have to port a little bit of it around and recompile, and they don't have to, you know, completely rewrite everything for different platforms.
Although I guess, oh.
I guess it'd be shit like Kotlin and Swift as opposed to just straight up Java, but you know what I mean.
That'll make moving video games cross-platform a bit more difficult.
Yeah, kind of, which is why I was saying if, as long as you keep like the NVIDIA and ATI cards, because as long as those interfaces, you know, OpenGL, Vulkan, DirectX are still there, you don't have to redo that much of these engines, right? And if they're all compiled C based on and letting the compiler and the libraries translate down to the machine code, it literally might just be changing some compiler flags, patching up a few instructions that don't quite work with those new flags, and going for it, you know? I think you will see a lot of stability problems in early builds for ARM systems, but I don't know. It's hard to predict, really. I'm just spitballing, you know?
Well, no one's ever successfully predicted the future. I mean, if you look back at World of Tomorrow crap that Disney used to do, we'd all be living in Mylar donut houses right now.
All right, next article. This one's from thehill.com. Google to pay some news publishers for content. Google announced Thursday that it will begin paying news publishers, some news publishers, for their content. It's a new licensing program that will pay publishers for high-quality content to post on a news service set to launch later this year. The program will initially include Germany's Der Spiegel, Australia's In Queensland, and In Daily, and Brazil's Diários Associados. Butchered those names. We are currently engaged in discussions with many more partners and plan on signing more in the coming months, Brad Bender, Google's news vice president of product management, said in a blog post. The new program is a change of direction from Google, which has been under licensing or increasing antitrust scrutiny over its ad revenue dominance. Google and Facebook together made up nearly 60% of the internet ad market in 2018, a dominant position that critics say has siphoned profits away from traditional news outlets. Regulators in France and Australia have both called upon Google to pay for news content. The European Union last year also reformed its copyright laws, giving news publishers more protection to ensure they're paid fairly for distribution of their stories. The reform would require aggregators like Google's News to pay for headlines and parts of stories. Alongside other companies, governments and civic society organizations were committed to playing our part to support news businesses, Bender said in Thursday's blog post. Today's undertaking exemplifies that, and we look forward to what we can achieve together. So, I don't know if this is going to be some kind of a unique service or just Google capitulating to make the governments back off, because it sounds like they're paying to link to things, which is kind of a scary trend. Where you don't allow people to link to your site unless they pay you? Seems like that wouldn't work that well to me, but I don't know. Maybe that's why they're saying a special news service, is so they can get around some of that.
Possibly some of that, but I know one thing that was hurting the news business is they were trying to make money off of Google Ads, but Google will demonetize certain news platforms if they dislike them. So Google Ads doesn't quite work, and Google's dominance of the ad industry on the internet pretty much means if you're not making money off of Google Ads, you're not making money off of ads.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I kind of wonder if antitrust is the right thing to happen to Google at this point.
On some of their business, yeah.
I mean, I'm not generally one to scream for antitrust to come in and break up companies, but in this case, I kind of wonder.
Well, the parts of their company that grew because of government protections and have become monopolies or monopolistic, I can see antitrust on. So, like, YouTube, I could see going antitrust with YouTube. I'm not sure how much they've benefited from protections when it comes to building their ad base, though. Well, and it's kind of argued how much of this is interconnected.
Well, a lot of it's interconnected because they all live out of Google's data centers. But they built a lot of their ad revenue by buying ad companies back in the day. They built up their ad revenue, and then they just went out and started buying their competitors. So, anyways, show's running long, so I'm trying to run through the
next
last
show?
Few stories. Next article. This one's from Ars Technica. Representative Devin Nunes, Republican, California, cannot sue Twitter for defamation over the contents of tweets posted by a parody account posing as Nunes's cow, a Virginia judge ruled Wednesday. The ruling from Judge John Marshall found that Twitter is immune from the defamation claims as first reported by the Fresno Bee. Nunes, in 2019, filed a $250 million lawsuit against three Twitter accounts, as well as the service itself, alleging defamation, negligence, and conspiracy. One of the three accounts belongs to an identifiable person, Republican political strategist Liz Mayer. The other two are clearly parody accounts. One, at Devin Cow, posing as Devin Nunes' cow, and the other, at Devin Nunes' mom, posing as Nunes' mother. Actively editing content. Well, yeah, Google did just get caught out doing that, didn't they?
Yeah.
DP View and the IRC has a point there. Legal experts were skeptical from the start that Nunes would be able to win his claim against Twitter, ours explained at the time, because the law under which social media platforms operate, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, a vital, typically misunderstood piece of legislation, grants broad immunity to online platforms for the content users post on them. At its most basic, Section 230 separates the platform, perhaps better thought of as the host, site, or service, from the publisher or speaker. If Twitter itself, as a company, committed defamation, the victim could sue it. If the users on the platforms do so, that's between the victim and the account that did it, and the platform is legally not involved. Marshall leaned on that distinction, explaining that Nunes seeks to have the court treat Twitter as the publisher or speaker of the content provided by others based on it allowing or not allowing certain content to be on its internet platform, he wrote. The court refuses to do so. Devin Cow responded to the ruling with a tweet that included a photoshopped image of Nunes covered in apparently celebratory milk.
Well, I believe Nunes has an argument because Twitter acts as a publisher now. Twitter shadow bans. Twitter actually removes people from its platform. And that ends its protection. The reason this existed, it started out with AT&T saying, I can't be sued if someone on a phone call makes a defamatory comment because I'm letting everyone use this phone network. Twitter doesn't let everyone on Twitter.
Well,
Twitter doesn't let every tweet out on Twitter.
My understanding on Section 230 is that you can establish policies that you will use to regulate content on your platform broadly. But if your policies don't include things like we're filtering for political opinion and you go filtering one side unfairly against the other, you could argue that they shouldn't have that Section 230. Well, I mean, they pissed off Trump, but I think it's worth looking at how Section 230 is applied. And if you can prove a company is not playing fairly with its policies, I mean, you'd have to substantially prove it, like, you know, show accounts of similar size getting treated differently based on political opinion or something like that. But I don't think you'd have a problem with what Twitter's been doing right now.
No, I don't think you'd have a problem with any social media right now.
Yeah, because they've been getting away with it for so long. Or if they're changing their policy so often it becomes impossible to validate whether or not they're enforcing it correctly, I think that's another argument. But I'm kind of thinking these ought to be one-off cases in court, and Section 230 just needs some clarification put around it, or maybe just some good rulings, you know? I don't know that the law needs substantially changed, because the intention is the right one. Your platform should be able to control what's on it without being considered a publisher, as long as those policies are applied fairly. So, like, if I go set up a forum that's specifically for one political viewpoint, and I'm going to ban anyone who I think is, you know, from one of the other parties or whatever, as long as I'm upfront about that, that should be okay, right? As long as I'd say, yes, this is a, you know, a not a politically diverse platform, this is only for this point of view, this is all we're discussing, if you're from somewhere else, go away. I think that should be allowed, that should be okay. But you have to be upfront about it. You can't present yourself as an open platform for all and then start censoring ideas you don't like.
Well, maybe it's just that I've been seeing Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, pretty much all of them, they say they're a neutral platform, and they are very, very obviously not.
They were when they were growing. Now that they're established, they're no longer behaving like that. And I think you have a very good point. And if they are going to do that, then they either need to update their policies to match how they want to act and be open about the fact that they're openly hostile to certain political views, or they need to be treated as an editor and lose their Section 230 protection. I'm okay with that. Because I think that's the real problem, is that these platforms are not upfront with how they operate. You know, if I know that a platform is openly hostile to my political views, okay, I can choose not to use that platform and go use a different one. Fine. You know? But, you know, if that platform is claiming to be open for all, but then censoring certain people based on whatever, that's a problem. So, anyways, although Twitter is no longer involved, Nunes's claims remain against Maher and the two parody accounts directly. That pursuit, however, may also be a dead end, as Nunes' attorney said earlier this month that he and his client have so far been unable to identify the actual human or humans behind the supposed farmyard animal or alleged mother. Nunes is infamously litigious, and the suit against Twitter is far from his last, or was far from his last. He is pending lawsuits against several news organizations, including a $435 million suit against CNN, claiming the news network defamed him when it reported on Nunes' involvement in the president's Ukraine activity. Marshall, in his ruling, observed that Nunes has alleged that Twitter has a bias towards a point of view, and that bias is so extreme that it governs its decisions regarding content that is allowed on its internet platform, and of course that content makes it a content provider. The distinction is legally incorrect, Marshall noted. Even if Twitter did moderate according to a specific political point of view, which there is no evidence it does?
That's arguable. Yeah. And arguably wrong.
It would be legally allowed to do so. And that's what I was saying. They are legally allowed to do so. They just have to be open about it. They have to be upfront, like, here's our policy. But that bad faith, politically driven argument against social media platforms has, okay, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, then it turns into political shit fight, which I'm not interested in. So, again, I agree. It's okay for Twitter, if Twitter wants to say they're going to censor right-wing views, that's fine. They just have to say that. They have to put it in writing on their policies. They can't, you know, just come out and say, oh, no, we're for everyone, and then, you know, censor certain viewpoints they don't like. Although, I do wonder how much of it is the people in management at these companies aren't really paying attention, and the people they're hiring don't have the ability to separate their political viewpoints from, you know, their job.
Yeah.
And I know with Trump's account, Twitter's made that claim a couple of times, that they've just had moderators who needed better training because they were acting politically when they shouldn't have been. Again, that's still that company is responsible for the actions of its employees, right? So if they're not acting fairly, then that's a problem. And either they need to change their policy to match their behavior, or they need to adjust their behavior to match their policy. I think the problem I have is they have a stated usage, you know, agreement, and then if they don't adhere to that themselves, well, you know, that's then yeah, they're an editor, you know. Is that not how it works?
That's how it should work, but that's not how it works.
I know.
And the way we're set up is, and I can't think of a better way of doing it, so I don't think we should change our settings, that innocent until proven guilty means for them to change, you have to be able to take them to court, and you have to have enough money to be able to take them to court.
I think Nunes does, so...
Nunes is someone that does. And one thing I think that's hurting him, and I do believe this is crap pretty much nationwide, not just on the internet, but our Supreme Court has stepped in and set some horrible precedent when it comes to libel and... what's the other one?
Slander.
Libel and slander. The First Amendment isn't meant to protect you from lying. You have the right to speak anything. You have the responsibility to speak the truth. So for an exceptionally long amount of time, if I were to call Morp's pedophile on his station, he could actually sue me and win a defamation because I've defamed him. Now, if you're a political person or just someone sufficiently famous, that protection doesn't stand anymore. And that is a horrible precedent set by the Supreme Court. Free speech was never meant to protect libel and slander. It was meant to protect you from
government
holding an unpopular political view or religious view, but you couldn't knowingly lie.
Well, you know, that's all right, Madman. You're going to call me a pedophile. I don't need to take the courts to solve that issue.
I'm about to get kicked. Oh, God, I'm about to get kicked.
What? No, I'm not going to kick you out of TeamSpeak. I'm going to drive out to where you are and physically start kicking. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah.
That's a solvable problem.
See you in the morning.
Yep.
But, yeah, that's an issue I think we're having with just more than the internet. We allow people to be slandered and libeled way too easily.
Is Madman a 12-year-old girl?
If that, I'd have to lock my door. The whole pedophile joke again. Or is that moving into plebeophile?
I don't know.
Oh, God, I know the different terms. I should not be able to parse this. I spent too much time on the internet or near Milo Minneapolis.
All right, let's do this. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is an interesting little Python program called WireViz. It uses the GraphViz library, and you define your connectors and wire colors in YAML files, which are really easy to read. It's kind of a hierarchical list where you say connector 1, connector 2, you give it a type, you list out its pins, and then you define your connectors, you define your cables, and then you go through and define what's connected, and this thing will actually generate wiring diagrams for you based on that. You know, different colors of wire, different connectors, you know, what wire should be hooked up to what. So if you need to generate wiring diagrams, you know, like when I'm working on some of my printers, these would be useful. Because although I did make a mistake and use some ribbon wire that was all the same color, which is great fun when you're like, okay, when does this cable go? They're all the same color, son of a bitch. And you have to get out the damn multimeter to figure out which one's the power pin. So, don't do that. Use multicolor ribbons. But, just a nice little utility for generating wiring diagrams using the GraphViz library and Python. So, I thought that was cool. And the next thing I have for you in Digital Dojo is a release on Thingiverse of a hot-end cooling system for Creality-style machines. So very popular style of machines. And the Hiromi Gen 5 came out. And he's got parts in here to support all kinds of setups on these Creality machines, which is fantastic because the stock fans on these machines are kind of crap. And, you know, modular mounting systems for a bunch of different hot ends, bed leveling systems. So if you're into building 3D printers and you use Creality machines as a base, these are very nice modular parts. And very well, very good reputation. And the guy who puts these models together, he actually does the fluid dynamic simulations on the fans to make sure they're working right. So, you know, wide range of parts supported, including direct drive setups and things like that, which are really nice. And, yeah, so I'm definitely going to be using this in some of my builds in the next couple of weeks. So, anyways, that's all I've really got for you tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit. In the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, the bot, Psychros, DPView, Madman, and the Coffee Maker. Madman, closing thoughts.
For a moment, I was flashing on a virtual breadboard, but I was like, no, that's circuits, not wiring diagrams. With your first story.
Yeah, I've played with some of that software that's supposed to, like, virtual breadboard things up and let you test circuits and software, and unfortunately, the really good stuff costs money. But there is, I forget the name of it now. I think, is it Tinkercad? I think Tinkercad has the module. Now I gotta check. There's a web-based service for doing your own circuit diagrams and part diagrams. And I'm trying to remember if it was part of Tinkercad or now I gotta sign into Tinkercad because I can't remember. Okay. Circuits. Yeah, it is Tinkercad. So they got a thing where you can try circuits on Tinkercad and put together circuit diagrams that way. But this is more specifically like, okay, connector one to connector two. So like if you're doing an electrical box, if you're doing a controller box for a piece of equipment, piece of machinery, things like that. If you're doing documentation for, say, building wiring, I could see this being useful. Networking closet, telephone closet, that kind of thing. I don't know that the scrutiny would stand up if you were doing power line. I'm pretty sure that there's, you know, because there's actual code on that, that, you know, if you did a wiring diagram in this thing for power line, it probably, well, I don't know. I don't know the requirements on that. I'm not a licensed electrician. I assume that's something you would check, but, still, you know, it's a nice little project for just putting together how things are just how wires put together. But anyways, I've got nothing else. Did I read everything on the closing? I think I read everything on the closing. Madman, do you have anything else, or do I start playing sound effects?
Oh, I see the Coffee Maker hadn't started recruiting any other appliances. We may still be safe. Although I'm keeping my eye on the fridge, it's been wanting to suck up bandwidth, I can tell.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Johnson goes down and call the night.
Shut up, Wesley.